You're listening to On the Record Online with Eric Schwartzman, where reporters and journalists go on the record about how they use the internet to cover the news. For the latest trends, tips, and tactics on how the web shapes popular opinion, subscribe to our RSS news feed or visit us online at www.ipressroom.com.
Heather Green, technology editor at Business Week and co-blogger with Stephen Baker of Blog Spotting, goes on the record.
You either had publications or you had TV or you had radio. And, you know, as things go digital, you can come up with all kinds of new ways to package information or create information or listen to it, right? And so, yes, I think there's a fragmentation that podcasting is going to be a part of.
Welcome to another edition of On the Record Online. This is the podcast that brings you the story behind the story. We do in-depth one-on-one interviews with journalists from the mainstream media, as well as, from time to time, discussions with influential bloggers, podcasters, newsmakers on the subject of how technology is changing and threatening to disrupt the media business as we know it. I'm your host, Eric Schwartzman. I specialize in helping organizations integrate the web into their marketing, communications, and PR initiatives. I am also personally and professionally interested in how technology and the internet are changing the way organizations communicate and the way we communicate and consume media and information. Today, we have a one-on-one interview with Heather Green. If you have suggestions for other people you'd like to hear on the show, please let me know. Put a comment at the blog at www.ontherecordpodcast.com or go ahead and give us an audio comment by calling the audio comments line. That number, 206-202-4805. I want to thank Shel Holtz for immediate release, The Hobson Holtz Report, for helping me put the questions together. Up next on the podcast, we'll be hearing from David Pogue of the New York Times and the gentleman behind the Wikitorial experiment at latimes.com. His name is Rob Barrett. So if you want to get those as soon as they become available, subscribe to our news feed at www.ontherecordpodcast.com. And so now we're going to play for you the Heather Green interview. It's around 40 minutes long. As always, it is played entirely uncut. And we are going to share that with you after this.
Don't be left behind. Get the latest online PR tools and services from iPressroom. Powerful, easy to use, available on demand. Extend your sphere of influence online with iPressroom, tools for online media centers, virtual private press rooms, RSS news feeds, podcasts, and more at www.ipressroom.com. iPressroom, always on, even when you're off.
Heather Green is a department editor for Business Week, where she writes and edits stories about digital media, the wireless internet, and consumer gizmos. She joined the magazine in November 1997 and is based in New York. Prior to Business Week, Green worked for 3 years at Bloomberg News, covering internet-related businesses. Along with her co-blogger, Stephen Baker, Green also writes for one of Business Week's 8 blogs, Blog Spotting. The blog is aptly subtitled, Where the Worlds of Business, Media, and Blogs Collide. Heather, thank you for taking the time to do this interview for us at On the Record Online.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
Now, I know you started at Bloomberg. Where were you before Bloomberg?
Well, actually, Bloomberg was my first job. I got a late start on my career. I lived in Paris for quite a long time, and I went to school there, and I got a graduate's degree. And so I was 27 and living in Paris and having a great life, and I decided I needed to come back to the United States and get a career, and that's when I went to Bloomberg.
Now, where did you study in Paris?
Yeah, I was at a school, it's called Sciences Po, and it's a French school. I thought at one point that I wanted to be a diplomat, and so it's all about political science and economics, and so I was there for 3 years. And I was also working at the same time at the International Herald Tribune, which is the daily paper, the English daily paper, owned by, at that time, the New York Times and the Washington Post, that is based in Paris, and so I was working there part-time as well.
What were you doing at the Herald Tribune?
It wasn't very glamorous. I was just an editorial assistant. I wrote a few stories, very few, but basically they just had a whole group of people, young people, you know, in their 20s, who did all kinds of just things, you know, some copy editing, some working with the union guys down in the cellar to make sure that the right story, because we were still doing stuff on page on, you know, with wax and cutting and pasting things, and so we had to make sure that the cut and paste actually made it, you know, to the right story. So
were you using the internet to do your job at all?
Gosh, no. I mean, that was in 1990 to 1994, and so I never used the internet. It wasn't until I went to Bloomberg and they needed somebody. They trained me as a general reporter, and then they threw you on these beats after about 3 months, and they said, well, we have healthcare, or we have this online thing. We need you to write about Prodigy or America Online. We're not quite sure what they are, but we know we need somebody to start writing about it. And luckily, at the same time, you know, that's when Netscape was going public, and Java, and the browser wars, and it was fantastic, because they had nobody covering it, and I could do anything I wanted to write about.
And to what extent did you actually use the internet and email to do your job at that point?
At that point, well, it was a weird mix, because on Bloomberg we would have our closed system, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but you can message within people, you know, two people within Bloomberg. And so a lot of my work was done on this internal messaging system. And then I was doing a lot of work on email at that point, and that was really where I, you know, jumped into working with email. But, you know, I'm one of those generations that grew up with nothing, you know, some computers, but nothing really substantial, and then suddenly the internet comes along. I wasn't like a computer geek or anything, so I didn't know anything about it until I started writing about it.
I would imagine Bloomberg, since they really don't have any print news outlet per se, they're syndicated by other print outlets and pretty much rely on electronic media to distribute their stories to their member papers. I would imagine that the internet really was a shot in the arm for them.
It was after they adapted to it. Initially it was seen as a threat, because they had this very closed system that people bought. They bought the boxes, and you bought the connections. You know, you pay the, you know, a princely sum every month to have them. But they adapted very quickly. What was good for me at Bloomberg was that they were such a smart tech shop, and so you were always being, you know, exposed to all kinds of different kinds of new technologies. And, you know, right from the beginning, they wanted you to do video, so that they had Bloomberg TV, and they wanted you to do radio. And so you were, you know, doing what reporters are now going to become, you know, these sort of multitaskers who work in different mediums. We were doing that, you know, at that point, and that's just because they were pretty, you know, forward-looking. But they did adopt to the internet later. But you know, what was really fascinating for me was the ability to, you know, travel and meet all these people like Mark Andreessen and, you know, Jerry Yang and all these guys, when it was a small group of people working on, you know, putting together the internet, and there was a lot of, you know, excitement and, you know, naivete, you know, and intellectual curiosity, and nobody knew, you know, how it would make money, and it was just, you know, people were just taking a leap of faith, and that was fascinating to me.
Describe for us, if you would, the personality of Business Week. Other than frequency, what differentiates Business Week from Forbes and Fortune and the other mainstream business publications?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, we haven't had the different scandals that you might have had, not at Forbes or Fortune, but at some of the other magazines or TV channels, networks. And so I think we still, you know, have a great deal of authority and authenticity. And I think people, you know, our readers, you know, trust us, the subscribers trust us. And so that is something you have to be, you know, you have to be very careful with. And we try to do our best, you know, to keep people's trust. So that's one thing that that distinguishes Business Week. Otherwise, it's not, our tone is changing. It's not as maybe fun as Fortune is. I think we're trying to become more and more and more human, and I think that blogging is helping us with that, and I think that we're trying to adapt to that more. But I think in the past we've been much more here's the news, you know, our take as a weekly, you know, this is, you know, how we're representing you, a concise, you know, aggregation of what we think are the most important news stories of this week. And then I think you know, obviously we are, the most important thing that we strive for is analytic, you know, to be analytical. And we can't just write a story or a narrative. It has to have some kind of impact, and we have to think deeply about it and have a point of view on it. It just can't be an interesting story. We need to have some kind of meaning come out of it. So that's, those are sort of the things that characterize Business Week as a magazine.
And how has blogging as a whole impacted mm-hmm. the editorial decisions you make at Business Week?
Well, it's different because, and unfortunately, I can't speak for Business Week as a whole. I can only speak for the department that I work for, which is tech. And so, there's so much that's going on with blogging that, you know, obviously we're very interested in following it as a trend. And I think we've done a good job of writing about stuff like podcasting and video blogging, or you know, how companies are using blogs. And we've paid a great deal of attention to that because we think it's very important. And although, you know, again, the business models are very much in flux, it's, you know, something that we think is very important to cover right now. In terms of, is your question about how we cover it, or what's, is there more to
well,
what you'd
like? What I'm interested to know is mm-hmm. now that there is so much information being covered on various blogs, and obviously
right.
those blogs have the ability to turn around the information so quickly, you know, not including the fact that you guys have blog spotting, because I do want to talk about that, but what I'm interested to know is how have the decisions you make on what to mm-hmm. write about in the book changed as a result of the blogosphere?
Yeah, well, I think generally what you have to do is look at the blogosphere is as different as it is a development. It's an evolution of what's going on with the internet, and so you have to back up and say, what's the impact of the internet on what we do, more broadly, I think. And so on one hand, you know, the internet's been great for us in order to be able to find information, to find people to talk to, you know, find ex-employees of companies, or to find people using, you know, a technology, or to find, you know, what's the buzz of things. And so, and then on the other hand, you know, it makes being a journalist different these days, because you can't just, you know, write about something and that happened online and assume somebody hasn't heard about it. People are reading so much more online, and that's the reality, and that's good. You know, that's just the way it's going to be. And so we have to bring a lot more analysis to the events that are happening. And I think there's a lot of room to still be able to do that. And then we also have to bring our ability to reach, you know, CEOs and people within companies and employees within companies, and to bring that ability to have time to think about that kind of stuff into our reporting. But obviously, you know, what's going on and what's being written online is something we, you know, watch very closely, because that's part of, you know, what's being reported on. I mean, that's part of the event. And so we're just reporters, you know, we report, you know, what's going on. So that's kind of it.
Obviously, there are so many companies that would like to be featured in the pages of Business Week. Every year, PR Week does a CEO survey of the most desirable books to be in, and you guys are always in the top 10. I'm interested to know, how many pitches do you receive, say, a day or a week?
I think I probably get 50 to 100 pitches a day. And they're either informal ones from people who read, you know, read us and find our emails, and so will write to us, or they are formal pitches from PR companies, agencies, and so, yeah, that's about it. I think I probably get like around 500 a week, yeah.
If you had to just, I guess, from your gut, tell me what percentage of those pitches are of interest and what percentage are misguided, how would you break it down?
Well, okay, first off, let's look at it as there's probably more that are interesting than I can take in, because at any given time I'm doing all kinds of other things. Like I'll be working on another story that's writing in progress. I'll be editing a story, or I'll be doing something for online, or I'll be writing about blog spotting, you know, writing on our blog. And so, you know, frankly, I think a lot of PR agencies do a really good job. And so, and I find some good stuff and plenty of pitches. The problem is it's kind of hit and miss, right? I mean, and unfortunately, I just kind of think that that's human nature. It's, you know, whether I am able to listen to something at a certain time. If it's, you know, if I can build up a relationship with somebody, I will obviously pay attention to those pitches, you know, more closely. And that is something that happens over time. You know, if I find somebody who is able to help me and who I feel comfortable with and the kind of information they give me, then, you know, over time, then I'll pay more attention to what they, you know, are sending to me. But if it's something that's, you know, straight across the transom, you know, I'll just kind of look at it and within, like, you know, a couple of seconds we'll know whether I'm going to put this in another file for a little bit later or just delete it.
How do you decide, if there's something that you want to write about, how do you decide what belongs in blog spotting and what belongs in the book? And if you could, maybe start by describing or characterizing blog spotting.
Oh, sure. So blog spotting is our blog, and we write about blogging and about podcasting and video. You know, a lot of the stuff that's coming out of the user-generated phenomenon, the do-it-yourself phenomenon that is just so fascinating right now. And so we really we write about that and how it impacts, you know, newspapers and our job and what we do. And and so that's kind of like, you know, what we deal with on blog spotting. And so in terms of what we'll write about is what we'll write about there versus, and actually there's three places we might write about it: there, or we might write about it online, where we'll do like a longer story, or we might write about it for the magazine, right? If anything we'll find out about, whether through a pitch or somebody, you know, telling us about a briefing or something like that. And so, frankly, it depends on our schedule. If it's a good story and our magazine closes on Wednesday, and if it's breaking news on Monday, there's no way we're going to be able to. Very rarely can we figure out an angle that we're going to be able to write about on Thursday, because at that point it's going to, I mean, that we're going to, that's going to hold until somebody gets the magazine on Thursday. So usually what's going to happen is the stuff's going to, that will either be done as a magazine, as an online article, if we can get ahead of, you know, ahead of, I mean, say it's embargoed until Monday and the news breaks on Monday. If we can find out about it before Monday, we'll probably do an online story about it. If it's about, I don't know, about Yahoo or about Amazon or about, usually about a bigger company, you know, BlackBerry, whatever. So, but if it breaks that day and we have no prior knowledge of it, we will put it on blog spotting because it's a great way, it's a great place to put breaking news. It's kind of like, it's there and now, and we love it because there's so much information that we can never quite find the right place for, and here it is. So that's kind of how it works.
And what kind of feedback are you getting from your readers about the blog? I mean, are they clued in? What are they telling you?
Yikes. I don't know. It's a good question, Eric, because we have readers from the blog, and it's hard for me to know whether those people are the people who read the magazine. You know, we should do a survey and find that out. And I don't know, because we do get a lot of comments on our blog, and I mean, there's names that we recognize, and it's great. I really like the conversations we have there. And believe me, I have gotten such great story ideas from the things that people have put on the blog. I mean, the comments that people have made really have helped us, and it's just been a really great community for us. And so, but as to, you know, whether they're Business Week readers, I'm not sure. Because what was really interesting was right after we did a blogging cover about, like, you know, people should, you know, do blogs or get into them or pay attention to them, just not write them off. We got a lot of letters from people to the magazine of people complaining, well, you didn't explain enough what blogs were. And I guess our concern when we had first written that story was, we're actually going too slow in the story. And so, but I don't know whether the people who initially who were coming to Blogspotting after they read, you know, the article in the magazine are still coming, or whether we just have a whole other crowd there. They seem to know a lot about blogging, whoever they are, the people who are there now.
What about, just generally speaking, the rest of the editorial staff at Business Week? I mean, how do they feel about blogging? Are they scared, excited, dismissive? I mean, what is the consensus of those people that are covering industries other than technology about what's going on in the world of blogs and podcasts and RSS news feeds and wikis and so on?
Yeah, I mean, listen to that list, right? I mean, it's incredible, right? So, it's probably a mix of all those things. I mean, uncertainty, because nobody knows where how this is going to develop, and excitement, because it's another way to, you know, report and learn about things. And then, you know, again, not, you know, trying to figure out, like, where our place is as a magazine in this changing world, because it's not just blogging, again, it's all of the things that are going on right now with the internet, and that fragments, you know, a readership that we have had in the past, and so that creates a different audience for different things. And so we're working very hard to try and be a part of that, because, you know, listen, we're reporters, we just want we want to write good stories that people want to write, or we want to, you know, do good interviews, whether it's a podcast that people want to listen to. And, you know, we'd like to, you know, if ever we do video blogs, we'd like those to be, you know, things that would be compelling to people. We like news, and that's why we're all in this job. And, you know, we don't make tons of money, and so as reporters ourselves. And so the satisfaction comes in our jobs, and we want those jobs to be relevant, and we want to keep doing things that people are interested in doing. And so we're adapting, and if anybody has any advice on how we should, then please, we'd love to hear about it.
But are the other reporters, your colleagues, I mean, are they looking at you and Stephen Baker as sort of the resident geeks, or are they looking for ways to that they can leverage this technology as well?
Oh, no. No, that's a great question, Eric. And they kind of look at us as geeks, but they know that they're very interested in it, you know. And so we get emails from, you know, people within the magazine asking, you know, how do you do such and such, and can you give me some advice? And we're launching, you know, we've been doing more blogs, and we talk about, you know, we've had some meetings to talk about the blogs and, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and you know, frankly, we get emails from people outside of Business Week, you know, different people within, you know, McGraw-Hill, which is the company that owns us, because they're interested in knowing, you know, what we are doing too. So there might be people who think, you know, those people are crazy, they're just geeks, you know, they're going off in the weeds, but the people that I talk to, that I hear from, are interested in learning from us.
Now, of the
as much as we have to teach them.
Now, of these the pitches that you're getting, how savvy are the pitches themselves in terms of demonstrating an understanding of these new technologies we're speaking of? What percentage of them do you think could you say deals with it in a way that is articulate and cognizant of where at least we might be headed?
Yeah. Of the ones that so some of them you'll just zap right away, because they won't be things that I'm interested in. They might be in RFID or something that, frankly, I'm not paying much attention to right now, and so I will just, you know, I won't even look at that. So I don't know, percentage-wise, I'd like to say I get 100 pitches, you know, how many of those I zap right away. But I do think that the people who are emailing me about, you know, about this new media are very good. So they know what they're doing. They're savvy. They are savvy. It might not fit for me and or for my magazine or for, you know, my audience, and or it might not, you know. Yeah, I mean, typically there is something of interest there. It's just not right for us.
With Blogspotting, how do you know, how do you judge whether or not the blog is successful?
Well, I look at IntelliSync's blog pulse. We, you know, look at what's going on with Technorati. We track what's going on with PubSub. There is internally a way of, obviously we have an internal, you know, traffic tracking, you know, service, you know, where we look at, you know, what's going on with the logs, the server logs. And so it's just, I think it's the typical ways that people track, you know, how your blog is doing.
But you guys are in a different position because, I mean, you have a print book to sell. So
right.
How does the blog fit in and integrate into the overall media strategy? What's the objective of the blog?
You mean, is it there for advertisement?
Perhaps. Is it a potential advertising vehicle for McGraw-Hill?
I mean, there's advertisements there. I assume that that's what they're doing. But, you know, I'm not in those meetings. I'm a reporter. I don't know what they do in terms of selling advertisements. There's a real church and state at Business Week, we don't know, you know, who's buying what ad and what kind of negotiations are going on there more than anybody who's just visiting the blog, you know, can see what ads are there. So, I mean, the way we, our interest in it is as reporters and as people who are trying to understand what's going on in our own field, you know, that is changing. And so, you know, our interest is in being part of something as it's being shaped and not catching up on it or trying to catch up with it, you know, when it's too late. We want to be relevant, and if this is how people are getting their news, then we'll be there. So that's, I think, you know, editorially how things look like. I don't know about the advertising side at all.
I heard Charlene Lee interviewed on a podcast, and she said that one of the ways they're looking to integrate podcasting into their business is, I guess the way she had just described it is, we have information, and we sell that information, and that information is an onion, and we peel back the layers of the onion to get to the premium content, and we
right.
use the podcast and the blog to get people interested in the premium content. And so I was wondering if you guys have a similar strategy.
You know, again, I don't know what the business strategy is. I'm sorry, Eric. I don't know.
Fair enough.
There might be other people who know that kind of stuff, but honestly, I know it sounds really kind of old-fashioned, but I hope it does. I don't know. we're not even allowed to talk to advertising people.
I understand.
So
let's talk a bit about the blogosphere and the conversation as a whole.
Uh-huh.
Are you posting to blogs regularly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm typical, but whatever. Let's just throw that comment out. I don't think there is a typical blogger, but there's some that I really like to post to more than others, and maybe it's because I know those people and I've interviewed them, and so, you know, but I like a lot to post to, like, to Fred Wilson's AVC blog, and I post occasionally to Jeff Jarvis's blog. And I posted to Dan Gilmore's, and so Susan Marnett, and who else? I like to comment on things. Definitely, I don't know. I really like the whole mix of stuff.
Are you looking at you? You mentioned that you're using PubSub and IntelliSeek and Technorati to monitor the conversation. But are you, like, looking at how people get to blog spotting, where the referrals are coming from?
Well, you mean whether they're linking through other things?
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure, absolutely. And then obviously you'll go back and look at that company. I mean, at that blog, and see, you know, what it's about and who's linking through it, and decide, you know, whether you want to put it on your blog roll or not. Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating to see, as we write about other things, you know, who might be linking to us. And it's great, you know, resource to find some of these people, because, you know, most of the time, I mean, you know, frankly, all of these people know more about this than we do. I mean, we might be good at synthesizing it, but most of these people are such, you know, experts in what they're doing that it's just great to be able to find them.
And are these experts talking to you about podcasting?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've done some stories on podcasting, and so I've come across more... I've done some stories about podcasting, and so...
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Not necessarily just because I have read all the stories that you've written on podcasting, but I wonder, because you talk to people in the know on a daily basis, to what extent are they aware of podcasting? To what extent are they asking about it?
Oh, okay. Right. That's a good question. Yeah, people, are they asking me on a daily basis? No, not on a daily basis. I still think people are still kind of confused about what podcasting is and what RSS is, and that I think is pretty normal just because given, you know, the kind of numbers that we've seen in terms of that adoption. So I still think as much as, although I think that, you know, because you have the media talking about podcasting, like NPR saying, you know, here's our podcast, come get them. You're having it. The awareness is rising a lot more quickly with podcasting versus RSS. You know, so I think I'm getting more questions about that earlier than I ever was about RSS.
Do you see businesses getting into podcasting?
Yeah, absolutely. You mean corporations?
Yeah. Do you project that it will be adopted wholeheartedly in the future, and if so, when?
I think there's definitely places for podcasting to make sense within corporations. I was talking to Virgin Atlantic, and they were talking about how what they're looking into is using podcasting to send information out to their flight attendants, right, or to their pilots, and they're not sure if they're going to do that or not. But if you think about it, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Whether you send it as an MP3 file to that it can be picked up, for on a phone, or whether it goes to an iPod if somebody has something, or you know, like a Trio or whatever, that makes a lot of sense. And so I think, and then you know, if you do an earnings call, why wouldn't you want it to be a podcast? You know, you can. It's so cheap to be able to offer these kinds of things. I don't think everything should be a podcast. I'm not sure that I want, you know, Terry McGraw, you know, to give me an internal announcement as a podcast. But yeah, I think there's plenty of places where it would make sense.
And do you think? I know you guys are doing podcasts now. Do you think? And again, it's speculation because you have made it very clear that there's a Chinese wall between editorial and advertising at McGraw-Hill. But just speculating, I mean, do you think your company will actually start to sell sponsorship in its podcasts?
Well, yeah, I actually noticed just this week that we do have sponsorship in our podcast. It's Sun sponsors it. I don't know anything about, you know, what that was sold for, or, you know, whether that was free or in conjunction with anything else, but that's, you know, it's happening.
Now, what do you think? There's been obviously a lot of attention focused on Pod Show.
Sure.
Do you think they have a viable business?
I think they're going to make a go at it, yeah. I think it's early, and although I think there's a lot of competition, I think there is an opportunity. I do think there's an opportunity. What's unsure is how big the opportunity is.
What type of opportunity is it? I actually recently spoke to Ron Bloom for the last episode of this podcast,
sure.
And he intimated that perhaps some of the money, some of the corporate money that might be spent on podcasting might not actually be from advertising money. It may be corporate communications money, that perhaps some way the communicator would use this channel to get spoken word out to key audiences.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, what did you think about that?
I mean, to me, I think it makes a lot of sense because...
Yeah.
there are certain types of information that don't necessarily work in an 8 to 12 second soundbite. Sometimes the subtleties and the nuances are critical to really conveying what's going on and what the news is. And unfortunately, in a conventional terrestrial broadcast or satellite broadcast world, it's not economically feasible to broadcast a soundbite that's any longer than 12 seconds. And so it seems to me, as actually Neville Hobson initially suggested in a story that he wrote for Global PR Blog Week, that podcasting perhaps works best as the informal voice of the organization, because it's okay to hem and haw and yimmer and yammer in a podcast, while obviously you can't do that for economic reasons in traditional broadcast.
That's actually a really great point. I hadn't read that article by Neville, and he's really smart. Yeah, and I think that's true. I think that's one of the beauties of podcasting, is that it is informal, and I believe it's going to keep that aspect, and so you can use it, like you say, in different places, whether it's as a show or internally. I do think that's true, and obviously I know it's a misnomer. Everybody always says you don't have to listen to it on iPod. It can be just something you listen to at your desk too.
Obviously, there's a number of people touting podcasting as potentially disruptive to the existing media business. Do you see that as being a credible claim?
Yeah, I believe that. I believe it, though, in conjunction with all the other things that are happening right now. It's just one more thing that eats away at what was a very an audience that was, you either had publications or you had TV or you had radio. And, as things go digital, you can come up with all kinds of new ways to package information or create information or listen to it, right? And so, yes, I think there's a fragmentation that podcasting is going to be a part of. I don't know if it's always going to be, the same. I don't know if podcasting will be podcasting in 2 or 3 years, we're going to think about it that way. But this idea of audio on demand and being able to be done by anybody because it's cheap to do is, I do think that's very disruptive, yeah.
Do you think it's feasible that perhaps the underlying functionality that podcasting provides for, perhaps not in its current phase, but the fact that you can distribute electronic content over the internet, do you think it's possible that perhaps we might see cable or television programming fed over the internet at some point, with this being sort of the first cog in the gear?
Yeah, I think you're going to see it. IPTV, SBC, Verizon, what they're trying to do, that's over the internet, and that opens up because it goes down digital. It's closed internet, obviously. It's IP over fiber. It's not the open internet as we think about it. But that opens up things go digital. That opens up the ability to do things more on demand, cut and paste whenever you want, right? I think we just saw today Apple announced that it was doing that deal with ABC, and so I think we're going to see a lot more information come out across the internet, and I believe that the content companies are going to be a part of it. I think that they know that they need to do that, and they're not ignoring that this has to happen.
How do the distribution companies protect themselves? How do local broadcasters protect themselves? What role, if they don't have local news, what role do they fill if
I don't know.
Consumers are no longer looking at them to get their programming?
Right. Well, as much as I think it's disruptive, I don't think radio goes away. As much as I think podcasting is disruptive, I don't think radio goes away. I think we're going to have a lot more choices, and so it's going to be one of, and radio will still be there, but your point about if they don't do, if they don't have a lot of local strength, how do they do about that? I think that's a problematic situation. will they be able to, you know, afford to do the kind of programming they had had in the past, even if it had been cut down, if people are, you know, spending their time listening to other things. It's a, you know, it's a good question. And unfortunately, I'm not an expert in radio economics, so I don't know the answer to that. You know, I think that that's something that they're going to have to confront. I think what they're trying to do, and I think they're actually being much more aggressive than I would have expected, Clear Channel and Infinity, they're trying to do more online streaming, to do more podcasting. And so I think that they think that's the approach to it. The question is whether, even if there's more things to listen to, and, you know, even if radio, traditional radio, gives you more opportunities to listen to what they're offering, whether there's going to be money for all of that, you know, all of that content.
Well, it all seems to bode well for Apple. I mean, they seem to be making a lot of money off the whole thing. I mean, whether or not their stock moves based on that, they seem to be certainly selling a lot of hardware.
Oh my gosh, that's a great point. Yeah, no, Apple's sitting pretty, that's for sure.
And how do you look at that company? Are they a hardware company?
They're a hardware company, but you know, that's their razor blade I always get this analogy wrong, but the things that they're doing with iTunes is all for selling the iPod. And so, yes, they are a hardware company that's very savvy about figuring out a way to make their hardware compelling.
Do you see them becoming a media company?
And the reason I ask is I just want to add something to that.
A number of podcasters have been complaining about the fact that iTunes is caching their feed and making it impossible for them to measure downloads.
Rightly so. I haven't looked enough into that to know what exactly is going on. I think they're going to run into the same things with Yahoo too, right? And so then you're kind of beholden to Yahoo to tell you how much. I mean, I'm sorry, iTunes to tell you, Apple to tell you how many downloads you're having, and that's going to be a problem for people who are trying to develop a business model, because you need to be accountable. If people are interested in advertising, and not everybody is, and I think probably a small percentage are, the people who are interested in that need to have the metrics, right? And if they are beholden to iTunes, then that's a problem, a big problem. And so, I'm not sure whether that's a technical problem or whether they're trying to maintain control, and whether they have a bigger, you know, plan down the road. I mean, obviously, when you look at iTunes, you look on the right-hand side, and there's this little, you know, within the podcast subscription window on the, you know, the right-hand side, there's that little bar that says, you know, a dollar sign above it, and whether it's free or not, you know. And so there's something in place there for, you know, people to be able to sell or, you know, charge for these things. I mean, somebody's thought about that at iTunes, or they wouldn't have left that little, you know, tablet in there.
I know you have a magazine to write, so I'm not going to keep you much longer. I just have one last question. You mentioned some of your favorite blogs. Tell us what your favorite podcasts are.
Let's think. I love, I love Insomnia Radio. I like Coverville a lot. I like, right now I've listened to the Whirlpool blog quite a lot. I mean, their podcast quite a lot. What else have I listened to? Adam Curry off and on, not consistently. And, let's think. I mean, frankly, I like a lot of the NPR things that I never could listen to before from KCRW. Their music shows are pretty darn good. So that's what I have.
Thank you for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks, Eric.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to On the Record Online with Eric Schwartzman, where reporters and journalists go on the record about how they use the web to cover the news. For the latest trends, tips, and tactics on how the web impacts corporate reputations, subscribe to our RSS news feed or visit us online at www.ipressroom.com.